Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head-on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
All right. Well, thank you, Douglas, and welcome to Breaking the Silence. And, you know, every time I hear that intro music, it gets me all excited. It's like, we're just about ready to go into one of the best radio shows in America. And I truly believe that. It's not because of me. It's because of the guests that we have on the program. And tonight is no exception. So just welcome. We had a beautiful day. I'm looking out across the medical center here at the most beautiful city in the country. Houston, Texas, and I'm looking out and I'm seeing Methodist Hospital and Memorial Hermann and Ben Taub and Texas Children's Hospital and the wonderful MD Anderson and Baylor College of Medicine. It's just been a beautiful day here at Houston. Been a little cool, but we're just enjoyed a wonderful sunshiny day here in January of 2020 in Houston, Texas. So welcome to the program. Doug already gave you the phone number, but we want you to jot it down because you may want to call in tonight, 888-627-6008. We're welcoming all kinds of comments and questions and thoughts. And even if some of Robin's friends, our guests, friends are listening tonight, feel free to call and tell me something about her that you just love or that you respect in her and appreciate. We would love to hear from you tonight, 888-627-6008. You know, I love how we come up with guests on the show. Next week's guest is going to be an absolute phenomenal coincidence. No. There's no happenstances in this world. It's an absolute divine intervention. By chance, last year I was in Las Vegas at my book table, talking to all the counselors and therapists and social workers that I was speaking to and helping train. And one person came by and they looked at my name tag and introduced themselves. And they said, "Are you from Texas?" I said, "Sure am." And I said, "I'm from Houston." I always love to say the word Houston. I said, "Yeah, I'm from Houston." And this gentleman said, "And where at in Houston?" I said, "Well, I'm at Baylor College of Medicine and Texas Children's Hospital." And, he said, "Oh, my lands." He said, "My office, I'm a counselor. My office is two blocks right down the road from where you work." I said, "Oh, my lands." So we talked a little bit. And then a few weeks ago, next week's guest called me and said, "Hey, my counselor handed me your book one day, and I've read it. And I just want to talk to you a little bit." And we have similar stories. And he is going to be the guest next week. And he's right in the middle. Well, I think he's right at the beginning stages of writing his book called Facing the Shadow. Brandon Dempsey will be here next week. And I just can't wait to talk to him. So that's going to be great. In a few weeks, we're also going to have, and I think our guest tonight will be interested in this, possibly one of the witnesses, survivors of the Santa Fe shooting that took place in the high school there. And she actually had her boyfriend killed in that shooting. And she's a senior in high school, and she's going to be a guest on the program the next upcoming weeks, too. We probably have this evening Liz from England, London, England, called me this week, and it was so wild to talk to her. She is listening in tonight, and her accent was just an unbelievable English accent, and it was kind of hard to understand her. But she's listening in tonight, and then hopefully Carl and Amber are listening in, and Bernice and Annie and my son Curtis. So we have so many people. Sandra hopefully is listening tonight. So we're just going to have some people just welcome to the program, and I'm looking forward to what we have coming up. In the next few weeks, I will be all over this country, Atlanta, Georgia, Anaheim, California, Chicago, Illinois, Wisconsin Dell, Wisconsin, and then College Station, Texas. It's going to be a wild 2020, and the first few months are going to be really, really busy. So hopefully you'll keep me in your thoughts and prayers for that. If you haven't been on our Instagram page, Facing Shattered by the Darkness, feel free to get on the Instagram page and also the Facebook page. The new book, Overcoming the Darkness, video is on there. Feel free to look at that, share that, give me your thoughts on that, and I would love to have your input on that. So Instagram, Shattered by the Darkness, and Facebook, Shattered by the Darkness. Would love to have you get on there and join and pass that on, and just all that social media that I'm not very good at, but I think it makes a difference and an impact on the people that can be touched by the program. So feel free to be on that. In the next few weeks also, we're going to let you know about a new World Cast live video event that we're going to do in the next few weeks. And at the title of that and what we've been working on is called The Quest for Hope. And we're going to be doing a live video world event right here in my home, kind of like we did for Hope for the Holidays back in December. And we're going to do that in the next few weeks, and we'll let you know more about that next week. Now I'm going to shut up and just introduce to you tonight one of the most respected guests probably that we've had on our program. And Robin Cogan is not just a school nurse. She is the Relentless School Nurse, and that is the name of her blog. And she has so much wisdom. Her resume is so thick, but she is now currently in her 19th year as a New Jersey school nurse in the Camden City School District. And she is the legislative co-chair for the New Jersey State School Nurses Association. She's proud to be a Johnson & Johnson School Health Leadership Fellow and a past program mentor. She's been recognized by so many different awards and accolades. It's just awesome. But she also serves as faculty in the School Nurse Specialty Program at Rutgers University. You hear that? Rutgers University, Camden School of Nursing, where she actually teaches the next generation of school nurses. And it's just an honor, all the way live from New Jersey tonight, to welcome Robin Cogan. Robin, are you with us this evening?
I am with you. Hi. This is a delight and an honor to be on your show.
Well, Robin, we're just looking forward to this evening, and you have so much wisdom. And it's not just, you know, in my days, that school nurse was a little old lady, kind of like the cafeteria lunch lady that kind of gave me an aspirin and called my mom and told her to come pick me up when I didn't. It's a whole different ball game now, and I am looking forward to our conversations tonight and all the different topics that you have wisdom on. And just welcome to the program. What's the weather doing in New Jersey right now?
It is really cold in New Jersey. We had a little snow yesterday. It's probably in the low 20s. And very windy.
Yeah, okay. Well, I tell you what, grab your cup of coffee, and I have my Diet Mountain Dew right here. We're just going to sit back and talk, and I'm looking forward to just kind of digging inside of your brain and some of the experiences that you've had. Tell me, right out of the chute, what got you involved in your blog and the title, The Relentless School Nurse? What is that all about?
Well, let me just say that from the time I met my husband, which was 39 years ago, he has always called me relentless, in a good way, in a good way. So I knew years ago when I wanted to start a blog that that would be the name of my blog. I also think that being relentless as a school nurse is what it takes to keep our kids safe, healthy, and as we say at our National Association of School Nursing, safe, healthy, and ready to learn. Mm-hmm. So being relentless is what we need to be, especially in this 21st century world that we find ourselves in and working in for our students.
Tell me what you are passionate about when it comes to what's going on in our world right now with the kids of today. What just gets you passionate about wanting to help and prevent and assist them? Tell me about that inside your mind.
Yeah, well, I think the thing I'm most passionate about is for people to understand the scope of the practice of school nursing, what we do. As you said, in what you remember about your school nurse is very different than what is happening today in school, right? So part of the reason I started the Relentless School Nurse, actually one of the biggest reasons I started, was to amplify the voice of school nursing, to really be part of describing our role, because when we don't say what we do out loud, other people describe what we do and who we are. And so I started the blog to talk about stories from my own health office, and I soon realized that what was most important is to share stories from health offices across the country. Because what is happening in school today is very challenging on so many levels. And I'm really glad that you are so involved in the movement of adverse childhood experiences, because that, to me, is the foundation for which our practice expands. Understanding that almost every child that enters our schools has experienced some type of adversity, it really drives much of my practice, and I know a lot of my colleagues. And it's not just the students. It's also the teachers. And guess what? It's also the school nurses. It's our world.
With your involvement with the adverse childhood experiences, the ACEs, what seems to be the most prevalent trauma ACE that seems to walk through your door that you interact with most often?
So when I look at ACEs, I think of it as something that we call in nursing and in healthcare universal precautions. The fact that almost every child and probably adult will have had some type of adversity. What it is almost doesn't matter compared to the fact that it's present. Mm-hmm. So whether or not it was child abuse, neglect, whatever it was, there's an impact on the child and on the family. And so what I see today is I see children exposed to violence. I see children whose families are experiencing homelessness, hunger. I work in a very complex urban school district. Mm-hmm. I have many students who are undocumented. But I also see adults who are equally struggling with their own adversity that shows up in most unexpected ways, right? Mm-hmm. I also believe in terms of adverse childhood experiences, when you combine those with adverse community environments, you have what's called a pair of ACEs.
Wow, and that's deep. We could dig in that one for the next 3 weeks. And wow, Okay. So first of all, I appreciate the correction because, you know, sometimes I get into that and then I kind of jump off on going, oh, well, you know, the sexual child abuse is the trauma that we need to. No, I think any type of trauma is the issue. And that when a child walks
right.
in
it's not,
to your, yeah.
Yeah, it's not the, it doesn't, it's that universal precaution means that we imagine that everyone would benefit from a welcoming environment, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone will benefit from kindness. Everyone will benefit from a safe place to land, to have a safe place to land. So whether or not that trauma was A, B, or C, it's inconsequential compared to what children will benefit from. How can we support them and each other? How can we help co-regulate our kids? Which means the adults have to regulate themselves. Mm. I mean, a lot of this is how we are responding versus reacting. You know, when we react to things, I always tell my kids, when you find yourself reacting, you're going to know, because right in the middle of that word is the word act, which equals drama. So if you find yourself engaged in drama, that means you are not responding. You are not stopping and taking a breath. You are reacting like a knee-jerk reaction to something. And that's a helpful distinction.
Yeah. Okay. So with today's child, because, you know, even though I truly, you know, and you do too, we travel the country probably talking about ACEs, and somewhat, I do it almost every presentation I give. But, you know, the ACEs is an awesome indicator, but those 10 questions don't even cover nowadays what the children are going through. I mean, bullying is not part of that. Economics is not part of that. You know, there's so many different things now that they're saying, okay, it needs to expand a little bit.
There is an expanded survey, I think, with 14 questions or 15 questions that includes other social determinants, mm-hmm. things like food insecurity, housing insecurity. We can imagine that most of us have experienced something, right? And so that's kind of the foundation that my practice comes from. And that I have found helpful. I also am very focused on the impact of violence and what it means as the child grows up. Because I really know deep in my heart and my being and the research that I've done, that exposure to violence creates a propensity to either become violent or or experience violence. So either be a victim or a perpetrator. That's what the evidence is showing us. And I am very much involved in the gun violence prevention movement. And certainly as a school nurse and as a family member survivor, in my own family of two mass shootings, this is really the focus of my work. But it's very much linked to ACEs.
Yeah, and we're going to dig a lot deeper into that with as the show progresses. With the trauma-sensitive schools, that system that we're trying to get established, and I'd love for every school to be trauma sensitive. How do you incorporate that into your work and into the very school that you're in? How do you promote that, being trauma sensitive? Not only you, but the people and everybody around you.
So that's really, I love that question because I think it's very misunderstood how to become that. What is that? That's really, once you understand the ACEs study and the impact, and how and what one individual person can do to change the trajectory of a child's life, right? You want it to happen. You want everyone to embrace this idea. But it does take time, and I think that's the frustrating part. So I like to look at it as trauma responsive versus trauma sensitive. And some are even taking the word trauma out of that totally. Say what we want to see. So what we want to see is schools that are inclusive, schools that are welcoming, schools that are kind, schools that promote these nurturing environments. And what I do is, the way I've introduced the information in my schools is I started by showing the movie Resilience, sharing the information around that film, and then working with other groups to bring specialists into our school to train the teachers on strategies to use in the classroom. And a lot of the strategies really have to do with the adults being able to co-regulate with the children. So that it is very, you know, we can't teach a child when they are stuck, let's say, in the basement of their brain, in, you know, the amygdala of their brain, which is that fear center. Children aren't learning when they are stuck in the trauma piece. They can only learn when it's in a calm, nurturing, even it's moments of calm and nurturing, right? Because we never know what triggers some children. So we have to be much more flexible and understanding. And it is a process. You know, I trauma-sensitive schools, it's not a checkoff box. I think people sometimes think they can take a class or listen to a lecture and they can check off that box. It doesn't work that way. It has to really be a shift in the culture of the school, and that takes time.
Yeah, and it needs to be a shift in who the teacher is. Each teacher needs to step up to the plate and say, you know, I care about every child, and I want to reach out and be that welcoming person and be that champion for them. To no matter what they're
not taking things personally. A lot of times, schools are very much pressure cookers. It's a very intense environment and a lot of high stakes environment. And sometimes, you know, we take things personally when it's not personal. You know, children are experiencing intense emotions, and sometimes we don't know what's happening behind closed doors at home. We can only, imagine sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I really do believe that it is our role to create the most loving, welcoming environment that we can. And even doing that, our educational system is not in alignment with being trauma responsive at this moment. We're not. Some are getting better than others, but if we're really going to be honest about it, we have a long way to go.
And we're going to dig into that just on the other side of this first break. So join us right back in about a minute and 15 seconds with our guest, Robin Kogan, and we'll be right back right after this break.
HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers A Child Called It and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Thank you, Douglas. Welcome back to Breaking the Silence. We would love to have you join in on our conversation. If you have a comment or question for our guest tonight or for me, for Robin Kogan, the Relentless School Nurse. Just a wonderful individual from New Jersey, a champion, I think, in this field. I think it's well known with all of your awards and accolades that you are probably one of the best school nurses, if not in their state, possibly in the country. And feel free to call at 888-627-6008. Robin, if you could spend a day with all the teachers in this country, what would be some, just a few of the things that you would share with them that you feel are the most important things they need to keep in mind when they're standing in front of their children as in class?
Oh, I love this question. If I could spend a day with all of the teachers, I would link them to the amazing people I have met through social media who are doing the most incredible work. People like Dr. Lori Desitale from Butler University,
yes,
and her partner in this work, Michael McKnight, who are teaching teachers classroom strategies to work with our most complicated kids.
Mm-hmm.
There are specialists in this area of neuroeducation who do understand how our brains are impacting what we see as behavior, but what really is happening is our children are stuck in trauma and they are hypervigilant. And what we need to do is come to a place of equilibrium so that we can help them. But
yeah,
most of it is our own ability to stay calm, right? Calm, mm-hmm, and nurturing in difficult circumstances. There are resources out there that can help our teachers, and I really wish that the biggest impact would be for our public education system to recognize what is most important is how we can be with our children. Testing is important, and educating our children is very important, but none of that makes any difference if our kids are feeling out of control, and
yeah,
if teachers are feeling frustrated because they have tremendous disruptions, what they feel are disruptions in the classroom, but it's really children not, asking for help in probably the most complicated way. It's really turning education on its head and saying, you know what, let's take a pause. We need to look at what's happening with our kids. I mean, if school shootings don't tell you that we have a crisis, what is going to tell us?
Yeah. Do you feel, I know you just mentioned the standardized testing or testing's important, and it may not be, you may not have been pertaining to just standardized testing, but do you feel that as a school, schools need to shift from being so concerned about the IQ of the student and possibly incorporate more of their concern in the EQ, which is the emotional part, mm-hmm, of who they are?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that we're missing the boat.
I think we
have our kids 7.5 hours a day, and we have an incredible opportunity to help and to really be that calm, supportive environment, and we are missing the mark, and our kids are telling us, our kids are showing us that we are missing the mark. We are living, I think, in a very traumatized world, and our kids are the canary in the coal mine. You know, when teachers say things are getting more complicated, yeah, because life has gotten much more complicated.
In the coal mine.
The canary in the coal mine, right? Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good line. You mentioned one word a couple times this evening. I don't know if you've caught it. I'm sure you have, but maybe not. You said the word stuck I think, three different times already in the program when the child gets stuck. And I have been working on that and noticing that any time when a child or adult gets stuck in anything in life, it ends up becoming toxic to them. That we have to teach each other how to reach out, grab their hand, or get on their level and talk to them and help them become unstuck and move towards.
That's the co-regulation I was talking about. Absolutely.
Yeah, that is so good.
It is so true. It's regulate, relate, and then reason. You cannot reason with a child who is dysregulated. And a dysregulated adult cannot help a dysregulated child.
Okay, regulate. And what was the second one?
It's regulate, relate, and reason. Yeah. And that's the work of Bruce Perry. I did not make that up. That is the work of Dr. Bruce Perry, who's been doing this work for more than 30 years.
And Dr. Perry just happens to work for the Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas.
Ah, that's right.
Matter of fact, and I talked to him just the other day.
Oh,
and,
my goodness.
Hopefully we're going to get to do something together.
You know what? The next time you talk to Dr. Bruce Perry, I am one of his biggest fans. Please tell him that.
I shall. I will. Hopefully, and it's so funny because he works right across right down the block, and I keep saying, hey, when you come to town, he said, Greg, I'm never in town, even though he works for Baylor College of Medicine. I think he's too busy traveling because he wrote that awesome book, The Child Raised by the Dog, The Child Raised by a Dog. And yeah, awesome book, bestseller, international bestseller, fantastic. Well, let's kind of shift, even though we're right on the same. We're just going to kind of dig a little deeper now. You mentioned gun violence, and obviously, Houston, the Santa Fe area, and several other places in Texas have been impacted by gun violence.
The shooting last week at a high school.
We did. As a matter of fact, my son Curtis, which is listening tonight, he's the one that helps me put my webpage together and all of that, had just signed that boy up to be in the Army. My son's a recruiter in the Army. And
he was in ROTC. The boy was in an ROTC program.
Yes, and Curtis presented the flag to that young boy's mother Saturday. And,
my goodness.
It affected my son a little bit, obviously, because he knew him and said he was just a wonderful boy. Tell me, this didn't happen in the Leave It to Beaver days. This didn't happen in the 60s when I was in school. What happened to where gun violence now is an epidemic in our school systems, in our country?
Gun violence is an epidemic. In school, in communities, across this country. And, you know, I want to start this conversation off by saying I believe that anyone who's safe to have a gun should absolutely be able to have a gun as long as they keep it safely stored.
Right.
Safe storage is probably the lowest hanging fruit of saving our kids' lives. Most of the school shootings have happened because young people have access to weapons taken from home.
Yeah.
8 children a day in this country are killed unintentionally because guns are not stored safely. You hear every day, you hear about young children, toddlers in cars, finding guns underneath, the seat in the back of a car, in the glove compartment. I mean, every single day, 100 people are killed by guns and 200 people are injured every single day. And every year now, almost 40,000 people die from gun violence in this country. And 60% of those that are killed are killed by suicide by gun. And many, many of those guns are found at home, not stored.
Yeah.
So safe storage to me would be something I think that we as a country, it's a shared value, right, to keep our kids safe.
Yeah.
It's not a Second Amendment right. It's not a gun activist right issue. It's about keeping our children safe. So that's one place I think we can all agree.
Yeah.
That, you know, we must keep our children safe. And that could change those numbers dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
If families, people would store their guns. So, in terms of gun violence in schools, it's scary. And I have to say that even though, thank God, most schools will never see a school shooting, although there certainly is an uptick in them, 95% of schools are now doing active shooter drills. And some of those drills are really scary. They are hyper-realistic. It is not necessary to scare our children to keep them quiet to practice an active shooter intruder drill. We don't fill our schools with smoke and debris and make kids jump through them to practice a fire drill, right?
Right.
It is
good
an
point.
Orderly thing that we do. Why are we doing this for active shooters? It's not, first of all, there's very little research to show that it's even helpful. And we don't know what the long-term effects are on our youngest children. I mean, I'm a preschool nurse now. We have active shooter drills in preschool. Mm-hmm. Why?
So your point is the actual drill can be traumatic for the children.
Some of the actual drills are so hyper-realistic. People are dressing up with masks like they're actual intruders. They're carrying toy guns. They're shooting. They're banging on doors and yelling and screaming. They're creating the sense that there is an intruder in your school. And many times, teachers and students are not told that this is a drill. So sometimes you don't know if it's a drill or if it's real. I've been in active shooter drills. We were not told they were a drill until it was over. That's very traumatizing.
Absolutely.
And we don't have the evidence to show that it's helpful. So we need evidence. You know, we need evidence to move forward. Gun violence needs to be treated as a public health epidemic. And in the public health arena, we need evidence to move forward. How do we know what the correct path forward is? Right now, it seems like we're guessing.
Yeah. Well, sometimes people jump on.
No, we're also responding because we're reacting, actually. We talked about that earlier. Because parents want to know that school districts are doing something. And I get that. Parents want to know that their kids are going to be safe at school. So school districts are reacting because they're getting pressure to show that they're doing something. But they are also at the kind of mercy of this unregulated school safety industry that is kind of selling them goods and wares, but we don't even know if they're helpful. I mean, kids now are coming to school with bulletproof backpacks. Do you want bulletproof backpacks on your kids back to school list? I don't. There are districts in Denver this year where the teachers, when they came back to school in September, they were given a bucket of kitty litter so that when they go into an extended lockdown, for whatever reason, and children have to go to the bathroom, they can have kitty litter to use. Like, what are we doing?
Mm-hmm.
Who are we? Who have we become?
Yeah. So what, Robin, what's your wisdom and recommendation on the system if we're acting or reacting in such a way, and sometimes we're going overboard, and there's two sides of this, doing nothing and then doing things like you're saying that could be the extreme. What do you feel is the answer from your point of view and from the wisdom that you've seen in these different shootings?
Step definitely a multi-pronged approach, right? So when we look at some of the school shooters who were students, some of them, like the Parkland shooter, you know what? That kid was expelled from school. He had, God knows what his ACE score was, is.
Yeah.
I mean, we have to look at, we have to protect our children, absolutely. But we also have to understand who our students are, and are we doing everything possible to meet their needs? And maybe we need more resources. You know, just looking at, I'll give you an example of the school in Houston that just had the shooting that your son knew the student. You know that there was only one school nurse in that building, 3,300 students and one school nurse. Only 10 school counselors. I don't know. I don't know the exact numbers of school counselors. Maybe we're looking at, we need to look at the staffing of our schools. What do our kids need? Are we meeting the needs? You know, you cannot have one school nurse and 3,300 kids and think that we're going to be effectively caring for the student population.
So obviously your role as a school nurse isn't just to take care of headaches nowadays. That's not what you're there for.
Right.
You're there
right.
for the complete wellness of that student.
We are the chief. We are the chief wellness officer of that school, even if we don't actually have that title. That's
right.
what I like to tell the school nurses I talk to. We are responsible for the health and wellness of the school, the students, even the visitors and the staff.
Yeah.
And we have this ability to see on the population health level as well as the individual student. And so you asked me earlier what I can do in terms of ACEs in my own building. That's where I employ the tools that I know to be that soft place for people to land in the health office. But what happens if there's no school nurse in your building?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel very strongly and passionately that across the country, schools need to look at how they're staffing the health office. We can bring so much to that school community, but we have to be present to be able to do it.
Are you working on that in New Jersey as far as at the legislative level?
So one nice thing about working in New Jersey is that our law already states that there has to be a certified school nurse. Now, it used to be in every building. They have changed the language to every complex. So it depends on how your school district defines a complex. But typically, New Jersey schools are well staffed with certified school nurses. However, we still have high ratios because a high school might have 2,500 kids. There might be two school nurses. That also is, you know, an untenable number. When I first started in school nursing, I was in a pre-K to eighth grade school. I had 900 kids by myself in Camden, New Jersey, which is an urban district with many complexities.
Yeah, sure.
That was a lot, right?
Wow. Okay. I tell you what, we're going to take our final break, and then, Robin, when we come back, we're going to turn the corner and talk about a little bit, just to give you a little time to think about it, trauma and the generational trauma, how it goes from one generation to the next. And we're going to talk about that in greater depth just on the other side of this break, and we'll be back in about a minute and 10 seconds for Breaking the Silence.
From HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Thank you, Douglas, and welcome back to Breaking the Silence. Our guest tonight is Robin Kogan, and she is, I recommend you to get on, just type in the Relentless School Nurse and just read about some of the stuff that she's involved in and believes in and has some great wisdom in and shares a lot on that side. I thoroughly enjoyed being on there today and getting to know more about you, Robin. With your work in schools, I'm a big advocate, and I say this almost every week, that not only should the school systems and the buildings be used for the students during the day, but they ought to be used for the parents during the evening to teach them and train them and to help them with the issues that they're going through, not only in their own lives, but the lives of their children. And because if we don't take care of the trauma in one generation, it's going to be passed on to the next and the next. Tell me what your opinion is on generational trauma from the nursing point of view.
Well, yeah, I have a personal experience with generational trauma.
Okay.
So my father was 12 years old when his entire family was killed in a mass shooting in 1949. His mother, his father, his grandmother, and 10 other people.
Wow.
It happens to have been in the city where I now work, which is somewhat ironic. And it was one of the first mass shootings in the country. And I grew up knowing that life can change on a dime, mm-hmm. that, you know where exits are, things can happen, a lot of safety, a lot of messages around safety. But I have to tell you, it wasn't until almost 60 years later when my niece was a Parkland student and my sister called me at 2:25 in the afternoon of February 14th. 2018 to tell me that my niece was, that there was an active shooter at her high school. And that's when I promised my sister and my niece that I would do everything I could in my power from a public health perspective as a nurse to solve this epidemic of gun violence. And that's really what drives my work.
Wow, you know, now I hear the passion that I was asking about in the first question, and that's what to me makes who we are. So now I understand you have skin in this game, and in that, everybody that is affected by certain things, if they would just get on and whatever position you're in, do what you can in that role that you've been given to change the world. And I applaud you in that because, you know, you're using what experiences that you've gone through to be able to change other people's lives. So how does that affect you, Robin?
You know, I didn't know about the ACE study until after my father died 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I wish I would have known about it earlier.
Right.
Because it was the ACE study that let me understand who my father was because of the trauma that happened to him.
Oh, and that's
how
powerful.
That trauma... Right?
Yeah.
And how that trauma translated to me as a child, as a young person, and how I probably, for sure, have passed it on to my children. And now I worry about my niece.
Mm-hmm.
Because trauma does pass through the generations.
Okay, explain to me.
Yeah.
Like, you're concerned about your niece for what she's gone through at the Parkland shooting. Tell me, as a nurse, but also as a caring family member, what that means to you, what concerns you, and let the listeners hear what your heart is in that. Because if something doesn't happen, what it can do.
Well, I certainly, after learning about the ACE study, I looked at my father. This is before Parkland. I looked at my father. I looked at what killed my father. He died from a massive stroke. He had every chronic health condition, diabetes, heart disease, gout. I mean, everything that you can link back to the ACE study.
Yes.
He died. He was buried. This is unbelievable to say out loud, but he was buried on the 60th anniversary of the murders.
Mm.
And when he died and we were planning his funeral, I was writing the eulogy, I could not believe that this is the date his funeral landed on. And it wasn't until I read the ACE study, really digested it, did a lot of research, understood that what killed my father started in 1949. And so, of course, knowing that from a health perspective, I worry about anyone who's been involved in any kind of trauma in terms of long-term negative health outcomes. And I worry about my niece because such a traumatic event.
Yeah. You know?
The whole community is forever changed. And while she may not have been in the building where everyone died, she certainly knew people. Her teachers died. She had friends that died. The whole community instantaneously was forever changed and wounded and traumatized. Mm-hmm. So I worry about the long-term health effects.
Because you've seen what it did to your father.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, if this doesn't get every listener on the edge of their seat to understand what we go through in life affects what we become, but if we grab a hold of the resiliency and turn it into power, and turn it into strength, it can make us even stronger, and we can change, and I don't want to sound too dramatic here, but it's the truth, we can help change the world if we will just see the impact of what's going on around us.
I could not agree with you more.
And because of what you've seen, you're who you are today. And the impact
that
you're making.
Which is why I'm so relentless, right?
Absolutely. See, this has been a full circle. I tell you what, that's exactly right. And, you know, I know people that listen to the program every week go, okay, Greg, you're going to talk about ACEs again. Yes, because everything in our life deals with not only the trauma, but also the resiliency part. And we have to keep hammering that too, because that is as important to understand what we've gone through, but also to understand the strength that we can gain from it and overcome it and then help make other people stronger through it. And you're part of that. You're doing that in your world and doing these programs and these speeches, and your work is changing who knows how many lives to the positive.
Well, thank you. You know, we don't know, right? You never know
no,
who's
we
listening
don't.
or who's reading, and just keep moving forward. And sometimes you find out, but actually, we don't know. But we know that it could, and it has, hopefully. And so I just keep moving forward, and I'm grateful and thankful to have opportunities to share my story, because I feel like we learn from hearing each other's truth.
We do. And, you know, I'm even to the world now, probably considered goofy, but, you know, even when I go out to eat, I'll hand my business card to the waiter or the waitress and said, hey, if you ever want to read a book, if you ever know of anybody that needs help, and almost inevitably they will tell me a story. Oh, my lands, I went through this. Or my brother went through this, or my mom went through this, and it ends up becoming a talking point, and we have a conversation. So we don't live in this world alone anymore. We're not on an island by ourselves. We have to reach out to other people every single day and say, hey, I notice you, and I care.
Yeah.
And that makes all the difference. And for the please, as we close this hour down, please, at least for our children, for the children that surround us, we can't let this just continue on. We have to reach out and show them how much we care. Robin, do you have a thought That's before true. We close out? Because I think we're about a minute away from being at the end of the program. Any last thoughts on your mind and in your heart?
Well, can I thank Carrie Sipp for connecting me to you, that
Absolutely.
Amazing turnaround mom from ACES Connection, and my other friends at ACES Connection, Sissy White, my dear friend. I just love, and of course, Jane was just on your show. I'm so devoted to that organization,
Carrie's listening, so she just heard that. Because she's texting me throughout the show.
Oh, good. I just adore her. I appreciate being able to share and especially talk about school nursing and what we can do to help keep our children safe and healthy and able to learn. And that is my focus.
Well, I'll tell you what, if there's anybody that wants to get in touch with you, they can catch you at Twitter at Robin Cogan, Cogan. They can also find you at the Relentless School Nurse website. And Robin, it was an honor. If there's ever anything that I can ever do to help you, you give me a call or an email or a text, and I promise you I will be there. And I appreciate you. You keep being the champion that you are, and thank you, and God bless you, Robin.
Good night, Greg. Thank you so much. What a joy.
And thanks for being on the program tonight and sharing with our listeners, and I can't wait until we close out, because that's when my emails and my texts start going off the board of what people thought about the program. But thank you for being with us this evening.
Thank you. You have a great night.
You too, Robin. As we close out tonight, we just want to let you know, and I think this is just so important when we have guests like Robin tonight, that we always remember who's in our world with us. Always remember who's standing in the elevator with us, who's in front of us at the grocery store line or whatever. Each person in our world makes a difference, and how we interact with them makes a difference. No matter what you're going through, no matter what you're in, what you're involved in, no matter, as long as you have breath, I want to let you know, please believe there is always hope, because I promise you, there is. Join us right here next week. Next week, we're going to have Brandon Dempsey. You will not want to miss that program next week. That's writing a book called Facing the Shadow, and he has an unbelievable story and how he's going to tell the whole world and break his own silence on live radio right here on Breaking the Silence. Join us next week, 8 o'clock Central Time, right here each Sunday evening. Have an awesome week, and God bless.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.